and welcome to Food Stuff. I'm Annie Reese.
And I'm Lauren Vogelbaum. And today, we're talking about Worcester.
No, oh, that's so funny.
That's the take, isn't it?
It is. It has to be.
Oh, folks, we're talking about Worcestershire sauce.
Yes.
Yes. And we're probably going to pronounce it differently every single time we say it throughout this episode.
Yeah. I also jokingly in the outline called this episode, how many times must I use spell check in one outline?
I can't say it, but for some reason I can spell it real good. I'm not sure what that's about. But okay. Worcestershire sauce.
Worcestershire sauce. If you listeners remember the Bloody Mary episode.
Oh, yeah.
You might remember that
I said that like, oh, I do remember that one. Mm-hmm.
I vaguely recall. I mentioned a story about Scooby-Doo that no one ever gets. So every time I hear Worcestershire sauce or it comes up in conversation, I always say, Worcestershire sauce? I hate Worcestershire sauce. And then the people are like, really? Why? And I'm like, it's a Scooby-Doo quote. My mom, every time I do that, she's like, I thought you loved Worcestershire sauce. And every time I have to explain, it's from Scooby-Doo. And I would like to include the clip so that you can enjoy the beautiful
cultural moment.
Very, very important cultural
share
moment.
It with us, yes.
Hey, waiter!
Yes, sir?
Give me some more of this here Worcestershire sauce.
Worcestershire sauce? Yuck! I hate Worcestershire sauce.
He does?
It's him. It's a chameleon.
Yeah, yeah, that's a clip of a villain from The New Adventures of Scooby and Scrappy-Doo, who is found out because of his immense hatred for Worcestershire sauce.
Yeah, and I recommend looking it up, both because I love it and also because he does quite the hand-body gesture.
It's a full-body flail.
Yeah, when he says that.
It's admirable. Sauce.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. But we're not the only ones that struggle to pronounce it. Then also, there's a gag about this in South Park.
Yes.
In the first season, there's an episode called Pink Eye where Kenny is turned into a zombie after a mortician accidentally spills Worcestershire sauce into the embalming fluid. Mm-hmm. And
it's not scientifically accurate, by the way.
No. But in the show, the only reason to stop like the zombie outbreak, the only way is I can't remember. Oh, to kill the original zombie. But they only find that out after they call the Worcestershire sauce hotline. There's a number on the back that's like, for any comments, complaints, concerns, or if there's a zombie outbreak, please call the Worcestershire sauce hotline. And they do. And there's a great like 2-minute bit where they're on the phone talking about their zombie outbreak and what to do. It's really funny. It's really great. And it was originally, instead of Worcestershire sauce, it was going to be Dr. Pepper. But Dr. Pepper
was like, nah.
No.
How about nah?
Yeah. So it became Worcestershire sauce.
Yeah, which is not an official copyright.
No. And we will talk about that a little bit. But, okay, now this brings us to our Worcestershire sauce. What is it? Bit.
Yes. Well, Worcestershire sauce is a thin, brown-colored liquid seasoning / sauce that tastes sort of salty, savory, sweet, tart, earthy, spiced. And I know that that might sound like I just said everything, like all of the flavors that you can experience in a list.
Yeah.
But that is what it tastes like.
It is. As a fun little exercise, I would love for everyone to like stop and think, what do you think Worcestershire sauce is? Just get that in your head. And I suspect you might be in for a surprise. I could be wrong, but I was surprised.
I was as well, yeah.
The most popular maker of Worcestershire sauce is Lee and Perrins. The sauce is British in origins, but interestingly, the British and U.S. recipes are different. Mm-hmm. Instead of malt vinegar, the U.S. version calls for distilled white vinegar,
which is gluten-free,
and 3 times the salt per 1/3 ounce, and subs out the sugar for high fructose corn syrup.
Not really a surprise there.
No.
Also missing from the U.S. formula is pork liver.
Oh, yeah.
There you go.
Well, there's one thing that you might be surprised about. In the U.S., a serving size is a teaspoon. In the U.K. and Canada, it's 1 tablespoon. You can find Worcestershire sauce-esque type of sauces all around the world under different names. Japan's tonkatsu sauce is an example.
Similar, yes.
Yeah. It can be used for a lot of things, but I mainly think of it as an ingredient in Bloody Marys or a marinade for steak or burgers or something. It's also a common ingredient in deviled eggs, Caesar salads, and Welsh rarebits.
Or rabbits, depending on how you want to pronounce it. Also, cocktail sauce, meatloaf, sloppy joes, crab cakes, meat pies, Chex Mix, and barbecue sauces. Freeze-dried Worcestershire sauce shows up in a lot of barbecue spice rubs, actually.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
It also pairs well with oyster, and it is a flavor of chip. Of course it is. It is. My mom does love Worcestershire sauce. I do too, but she uses it a lot. But let's talk about how it's made. Let's get into this exciting part of it.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Well, so first of all, this is one of the many products that we talk about on the show that tastes the way it does, largely thanks to bacteria and yeast and their poop.
Yep.
Huzzah. It is a fermented product. The original Lee and Perrin sauce is made like this. First, you pickle onions and garlic in malt vinegar for 1 to 2 years.
1 to 2 years.
Yep. Towards the end of that, you start curing some anchovies in salt for a few months.
You heard anchovies, everyone.
Yep. Anchovies. Cured anchovies. Then you take those things, you add some salt, some sugar, some white vinegar, some malt vinegar, some tamarind concentrate, some molasses, and a bunch of other flavorings and spices, which are secret, but possibly include clove, sherry, brandy, lemons, soy sauce, pickles, hot peppers, and walnut and mushroom ketchups.
Hmm.
You mix all this together and let the whole mess ferment for another several months. Then strain, blend, pasteurize, and bottle.
Yeah, I really did not.
Yeah, so it's a fermented fish sauce.
It's a fermented fish sauce. I've never given it much thought, but I always assumed it was kind of a like soy sauce, but with something added in.
Yeah, I think
like flavorings.
Yeah, like I thought it was just like spices.
Yeah.
And soy sauce. That's not what it is.
Nope.
Nope.
Nope. Fascinating.
Yeah, super fascinating. The show How It's Made, which House Stuff Works is not.
No, we get confused for that all the time.
The show How It's Made has an episode about how it's made, and honestly, it's like real gross looking.
I
totally recommend looking it up. It's pretty cool. And you can make this stuff at home.
Yeah.
It won't be quite the same, as most recipes do skip the fermentation part, but you can come up with a pretty decent version by slow cooking similar ingredients to the manufactured version.
Yeah.
And of course, if you're doing it at home, you can leave out the anchovies if you're vegetarian, for example, or you can leave out the glutinous products like the malt vinegar.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So if anyone gives that a try, let us know.
Oh, my goodness. Please do.
Yes.
Especially if you do the fermented version.
Oh, my gosh.
With the anchovies.
Like 2 years later, we get a listener mail. It's finally happening. My Worcestershire sauce is ready.
I want it so much. Okay. All right.
Yeah. We'll hold on hope that in 2 years we hear from someone.
But in the meanwhile, we're going to get into the history of Worcestershire sauce. But first, we're going to get into a quick break for a word from our sponsor. And we're back. Thank you, sponsor.
Yes, thank you. The history on this one is surprisingly, suspiciously, perhaps, straightforward.
Why, what?
Yeah. If we go back to fermented sauces based around fish, and specifically anchovies, trace back all the way to ancient Rome.
Yeah.
One of the first sauces, garum and or liquamen, was an extremely pungent fish sauce of smaller fish, like anchovies, then fermented alongside the intestines of larger fish. These fish parts got a healthy marinade of salt, and then were left in the sun for about 2 months, then drained of all the resulting liquid. It originated in ancient Rome and was fairly well known in the Mediterranean by 5th century BCE, as indicated by the remains found in excavations from salteries in the region. Many recipes in the Apicius, one of the first cookbooks, called for garum liquamen, including in sweets.
Hmm.
From there, you'd find sauces like essence of anchovy and anchovy sauce. We could include ketchup in this discussion of early fermented fish sauces as well.
Oh, yeah.
But Worcestershire sauce, as we know it, comes out of England in the 1800s. The story is that a posh nobleman went on holiday to Bengal in the 19th century and developed quite a taste for the spices he encountered there. Or Possibly, it was the one-time governor of Bengal, Lord Sandys. When he returned to England, he sought out a way to capture some of these flavors and ended up hiring two chemists for the job, John Lee and William Perrins. Their first attempts were not successful, according to the Lee and Perrins website. Quote, Lee and Perrins were not impressed with their initial results. The pair found the taste unpalatable and simply left the jars,
or possibly the barrel,
in their cellar to gather dust. A few years later, they stumbled across them and decided to taste the contents again. To their delight, the aging process had turned it into a delicious, savory sauce. Now, the whole rich fellow request thing might be totally false, more of a marketing ploy than anything else.
There are actually no records of Lord Sandys ever being in India, and certainly none indicating that he was the governor of Bengal.
So there's some fishy parts of this story.
Another story goes that Lord Sandys' wife had a taste for curry, and a friend of hers who had an uncle who'd served as Chief Justice in India gave her a recipe and even recommended two chemists to help her try it out. Or that could be completely made up, too. At any rate.
The first batch went on sale in 1837 out of the Lee and Perrins Pharmacy in Worcester, England. Hence the name. It's not the only Worcestershire sauce from the area, either. The success of the Lee and Perrins sauce led to over 30 competitor sauces just out of Worcester. Part of the popularity of these sauces was not only flavorizing bland food, but also tenderizing tough cuts of meat. In a fun gin and tonic throwback, or gin and tonic episode, Lee and Perrins also produced quinine wine and the purportedly anti-malarial quin sauce, or quine sauce, in 1830. From an 1830 cookbook, 2 wine glasses of port and 2 of walnut pickle, 4 of mushroom ketchup, 6 anchovies pounded, the like number of eschalots sliced and pounded, 1 tablespoonful of soy, and 1/2 dram of cayenne pepper. Let them simmer gently for 10 minutes, strain it, and when cold, put it into bottles, well corked and sealed over. It will keep for a considerable time. Ops. This is commonly called quin sauce and was given to me by a very sagacious sauce maker.
Sagacious? Goodness.
This is fun with pronunciation should be the other title of this show.
Absolutely.
Also, this note in a recipe for essence of anchovy I found, quote, fresh pickle mixed with red paint. I think maybe this meant wine? Red paint.
I hope it meant wine.
I do as well. Worcestershire sauce was pretty much an instant hit in its home region, and one of the first steps Lee and Perrins took to spread their sauce was getting it on dining tables of British passenger ships. They wrapped the bottles in paper to keep them from breaking, and to this day, some of the bottles are packaged that way. It didn't take long for it to become a British staple, particularly as a sauce for steaks. Some of the first ads for this stuff were great, hailing it as digestive and that it would make your hair beautiful, among many other medicinal uses. Worcestershire sauce arrived in America via New York in 1839.
A New York entrepreneur had ordered a bit to test out. It was supposedly the first commercially bottled condiment in the United States.
Oh.
And it was a huge hit.
Oh. As the sauce grew in popularity, Lee and Perrins were able to give up their chemistry shop and start selling the sauce full-time by 1866. Not too long after, though, in 1876, Lee and Perrins lost the copyright to Worcestershire sauce, allowing it to be used generically. The Lee and Perrins variety is labeled as the original Worcestershire sauce.
In the early to mid-1900s, Worcestershire sauce made its way to Japan along with a bunch of other Western foods, where it was adapted into the thicker, sweeter sauce, often literally just called sauce, like sasu, to be served with foods like tonkatsu, okonomiyaki, and takoyaki. Sometime, probably in the late 20th century, the original Lee and Perrins recipe, thought to have been lost to the ages, was found by a company accountant, written in sepia ink in 2 leather folios in a dumpster.
Oh, no.
He rescued them.
That is a heartwarming tale of triumph right there.
And in 2005, Heinz Company acquired HP Foods Group, including Lee and Perrins and their original sauce, for some $820 million, United States. I mean, that was for the whole group, but, like, still.
My, I just did like a dramatic, cartoonish, like
shock
mouth
face.
Agape. Wow.
Yeah.
Heinz showing up again.
Yeah.
Too.
Sauces are big business.
That's true. I mean,
condiments, y'all.
Yeah. You put them on. My family is a big condiment family. So, yeah. I mean, I guess you use them a lot. You put them on different things. Wow. Lee and Perrins. All right.
Mm-hmm.
So that's the history.
Yeah, and we do have a little bit of science for you. But first, we've got another quick break for a word from our sponsor.
And we're back. Thank you, sponsor.
Yes, thank you. There is just an amazing amount of flavor science involved in every wee little bottle of Worcestershire sauce. I mean, you're starting out with some of the most strongly flavorful objects that I personally know of.
Yeah.
And their fermentation does all sorts of really interesting things. Okay. This is also another section full of pronunciation, so we're making it happen this episode.
We are.
All right. Fermented anchovies release inosinate, which is a savory flavor compound, and onions add glutamic acid, another savory note.
Mm-hmm.
Those garlic and onions bring some sulfurous compounds, including allicin and dialyl disulfate, which ping your pain receptors. That's actually why garlic and onions taste a little bit like spicy.
Yeah.
It's that burn. Yeah. Uh-huh. It's totally pain receptors that are just going, oh. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
There's also probably a little bit of ethanol in there from the fermentation process, which does more of the same as we have talked about in our alcohol-related episodes.
Mm-hmm.
Tamarind, molasses, and sugar, or high fructose corn syrup, add some sweetness. Plus, the tamarind gives it the tart twinge, tamarind being a tropical fruit that tastes sort of sweet and sour. If you've never had pure tamarind, A, I recommend it. It's really interesting. But B, it's one of the primary ingredients in pad Thai sauce, if that helps you place the flavor.
Mm-hmm.
There's also capsaicin from hot peppers and eugenol from cloves to provide a little bit more of that bite.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And of course, the specific yeasts and or bacteria that you're using for your fermentation are going to make a huge difference in the flavor profile. Good old Saccharomyces cerevisiae is a common one. It also makes stuff like beer and sourdough bread happen.
Thank you.
Yeah, indeed. It can also add isoamyl alcohol, a.k.a. banana flavor.
Oh.
Uh-huh. It and Brettanomyces, which we talked about in our sour beer episode, provide ethyl phenol, a.k.a. like barnyard or earthy savory flavor.
Barnyard flavor.
Yeah. But yeah, no, seriously, like think in your mental catalog about Worcestershire sauce and you will find banana in there.
I'm going to go try some after this.
I had never thought about it before, but that's definitely a flavor that is in there.
Oh my gosh, I can't wait. I can't wait. And now I'm interested because I never would have thought that it had roots in India. And now I want to try it like with that context in mind.
Oh, sure,
and see if I can pick out
different
kind of those flavors.
Some of those spices, some of those spice road spices, sure.
Yeah, yeah. That is Worcestershire sauce. It's this was a fun, surprising one.
It is.
Yeah.
It's as fun to read about as it is difficult to pronounce.
This is true. It's actually kind of fun to say if you can get it right. There's something kind of fun about it. Worcestershire.
Worcestershire.
Yeah. Oh, we're going to get people writing in and be like,
Actually.
Oh.
There are at least four accepted pronunciations.
Okay. I hope we got one of them. I mean, we had to. I did watch a video on Huffington Post that was like almost every article I found about Worcestershire sauce started with, this one's hard to say. Here's this video. Go watch people trying to pronounce it. It does not look to my eye that is the way you should pronounce it, but that does not mean English is fun that way. I'd say Worcestershire.
Okay, I was looking at this earlier because it was driving me nuts about how it could possibly be pronounced the way that it is.
Yeah.
And I think that the problem is that we're looking at the syllables wrong. Like, we're looking at Worcestershire.
Uh-huh.
And it's not Worcester. It's Worcester.
Okay.
Like the W-O-R-C-E.
Sure.
Is one sound unit.
Huh.
It's War. Yeah.
Okay.
Worcestershire.
Okay. I remember the first time I was in London, I made a fool of myself.
Sure.
Pronouncing. Oh, God. Now I can't even remember how to pronounce it. Leicester?
Leicester. It's just Leicester.
See?
Yeah.
Okay.
Old German words that made their way into English.
Fun with words.
Thanks, Chaucer.
Yeah.
Thanks, printing press, for cementing our language while the verbal part was still evolving.
No thanks, it's more like. And on that note, it's time for Listener Mail. Yes, this is an old one, and I can't believe I forgot about it and didn't read it. Okay, so listener Nicole sent us a picture of her adorable dog Beans. And yes, please keep the pet pictures coming.
Yes,
it's the
every
best.
Day, please.
It's the best thing. But she also wrote this. I thought you may be interested to learn about a McDonald's Black Sabbath cover band I saw in Washington, D.C. a few months ago. Yes, Nicole, very interested. Called Mac Sabbath. The band members dress up as dark knockoff versions of the McDonald's characters. Ronald Osborne, Slayer McCheese, Grimalus, and Cat Burglar. And sing McDonald's-themed covers of Black Sabbath songs like Frying Pan, Super Size, and Chicken for the Slaves. It was wild. I have attached a few pictures from the concert to show you how wild it was. She did. It was indeed quite all caps wild. It was equally terrifying and intriguing, and I thought you guys would get a kick out of them. Also, to add to the wildness of the concert, the band that opened for Mac Sabbath was a heavy metal Star Wars cover band, Galactic Empire. If you ever get the opportunity to see either of these groups, I would definitely recommend going. I am there. Sold.
I am.
Come to Atlanta, please.
If I don't die laughing thinking about it, then 20,000%, yes.
Look up the pictures, listeners, if you're interested. They're
Mac Sabbath.
They're both hilarious and kind of frightening. It's quite a beautiful thing.
Oh, yes.
Mm-hmm.
Lindsay wrote, when I heard you were going on the Bourbon Trail, I just about lost it. I've been in the liquor industry at a liquor store for 3.5 years now, and I love to talk about bourbon. Us too. Yeah. You brought up the ever elusive Pappy Van Winkle, and I would just like to say that it is the bane of my existence. Everyone wants a bottle, and out in Oregon, we don't get very much of it. I work at the highest volume store in the state, still state controlled, and we get the largest allotment of Pappy Van Winkle than anyone else. And we get maybe 9 bottles of it. It gets released once a year, right around the holidays, and people get nasty over it. We don't do a lottery or a list or anything fancy. It's first come, first serve, and it usually gets sold within 5 hours of it being in the store.
Oof.
I get questions on it all year long, and I've learned some really great alternatives that taste very similar. One of my favorites is the Old Forester 1920 Prohibition Edition. It's a high proof, 115 proof, but doesn't drink like it is. It's very flavorful with lots of hints of honey and oak and caramel. Very well balanced and pretty budget friendly. It's only $60 here, and it's readily available. Another one I like to suggest is Weller Antique. This one, unfortunately, is becoming a little more difficult to find in my neck of the woods, but it's a really wonderfully priced bourbon that tastes divine. Just thought I would write in and suggest a couple alternatives to the ever elusive Pappy.
Thank you.
Yeah, thank you. I didn't know how they shipped it out, like how they picked how it goes to places. So that's a really interesting peek behind the curtain.
Yeah, it is. We have a liquor store like within a block of our office, and they do a lottery.
Yeah.
But we love bourbon recommendations, and this is great. Something that's sort of similar-esque. It's more attainable.
Yeah, absolutely.
Both price-wise and just stock-wise.
Yes.
Yes. So thank you, Lindsay, for writing in. You too can write us. Our email is foodstuff@howstuffworks.com.
We're also on social media. You can find us on Twitter and Facebook @foodstuffhsw. We are also on Instagram @foodstuff. We hope to hear from you. Thank you, as always, to our super producer, Dylan Fagan, who puts up with us.
He does. Last night he allowed me to show him that Scooby-Doo clip. He was very game and kind and
tolerant.
And yes, he indulged my inner child. And even laughed a little bit. Thank you, Dylan.
Yes, thank you. Thank you to you for listening, and we hope that lots more good things are coming your way. Worcestershire. Worcestershire.
Worcestershire.
Worcestershire.
Worcester.
Worcester. Worcester.
Worcester.
Worcester.